We as a church has been going through a series on Book of Acts, and today we come to Acts chapter 17. And we'll read from Acts chapter 17, verses 16 to 25. It's found in your pew Bibles on page 1075. Let us give our undivided attention to the Word of God. While Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day with those who happened to be there. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to dispute with him. Some of them asked, "What is this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Then they took him and brought him to a meeting of the Areopagus, where they said to him, "May we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? You are bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we want to know what you mean." All the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. Paul then stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, "Men of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To an unknown God.' Now, what you worship as something unknown, I am going to proclaim to you. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth, and does not live in temples built by hands. And he is not served by human hands, as if he needed anything, because he himself gives all men life and breath and everything else." The Word of God. I know most of the kids have left, but since it's a Beehive Sunday, how about some Lego illustrations of our passage today? So Apostle Paul is traveling right now. And in the previous city that he was in, he got in trouble for preaching the good news of Jesus. So he was in danger. So other believers immediately brought him to Athens so he can be safe. And now here in Athens, he's by himself waiting for other companions, travel companions, to join him in Athens. So he's waiting there. But right after he came to Athens, we read in the first verse that we read that he was greatly distressed. Why? Because he saw that the city of Athens was full of idols. And of course, you know, if you know the Greek mythology, there are lots of gods, right? Zeus, Poseidon, Apollo, other gods. And looking at all these gods, for us, probably it's more literary or cultural, but for the people in Athens, they were the objects of worship, right? They built temples for those gods. They really served and worshipped all those gods. So Paul, seeing all those idols, was greatly distressed. And even though he just came from another city, kind of fleeing from the danger that was caused by preaching the gospel, here he can't help but begin to tell the good news to people of Athens. And then he goes to the marketplace day by day to talk to people. And most of the people were skeptical. Some made fun of them, fun of Paul. But some people were intrigued by what he had to say. So those people, those philosophers, they invited Paul to come to this meeting called Areopagus. This is the high council meeting of the city. All those leaders and intellectuals of the city. And he was given this opportunity to speak and explain what he had to say. So there, Paul gives this talk, this sermon, so to speak, a beautiful and powerful sermon in front of these leaders and intellectuals of Athens. And today, in our passage, we just read the first two verses of that longer sermon. And at the end of the sermon, again, many people laughed at him, mocked him, especially about what he had to say about the resurrection of the body, resurrection of Jesus, because that was something that was totally foreign to the Athenians. But there were some people who have responded to his teaching and eventually became his followers. So that's the story of Acts chapter 17. And now my question is, what does this story that comes from 2,000 years ago has anything to do with us today in Vancouver after all this time? That's what I want to talk about today. And I do believe that this story is very relevant to us in our time, our day, in at least three different ways. That's to say, if Paul, like he came to Athens, if Paul came to Vancouver today, I think these three things, he will do the same as he did in Athens. And I think they are, first, how he felt. Second, what he saw. And third, what he said. How he felt, what he saw, and what he said. How he felt, it's the feeling that he had. He was distressed of all the idols. What he saw this altar to an unknown God, and what he said in his preaching. I want to argue that those three things are very, very relevant to us even today. So first, how he felt. In verse 16, we read, "While Paul was waiting for others in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols." As you know, Athens was at the time, and still somewhat is, but definitely at the time, the cultural and intellectual capital of the day. The political power was slowly moving to Rome, but still, intellectually, culturally, philosophically, Athens was the capital. And if you know, Paul was a very well-educated man. He was very deep in his philosophy, understanding, religious. So I assume when Paul came to a city like Athens, and it's probably his first time coming to Athens, we can imagine he can be fascinated of all the things that he sees, the pantheons and the architectures, libraries, schools, all those philosophers, a lot of heritage, intellectual heritage that he can be fascinated with. But instead, we read that he was greatly distressed. Or in other translations, it says he was disturbed or troubled because he saw the city was full of idols. So Paul, instead of taking a tour of Athens, he begins to tell the gospel, begins to tell the good news of Jesus. He goes to the synagogue, that's the Jewish church, so to speak. He goes to the synagogue to speak to his fellow Jews, and who are called God-fearing Greeks. These are the Gentiles who believe and know about the Jewish God. But in our chapter, more importantly, it is emphasized that he goes to the marketplace every day and speaks and reasons with people there. For us, when we hear the word marketplace, I don't know about you, but I think of supermarkets or shopping malls. But marketplace here, it's called Agora, and in Athens, that's where everything happened. It's kind of like our downtown, probably more like downtown in New York or Beijing, bigger cities, probably bigger than downtown Vancouver. And that's where everything happened. Finances, education, business, media, law. So Paul goes there and reasons with people every day. And like I asked him in the beginning, let's imagine Paul came to Vancouver today, to downtown, to Burnaby. And think about what he would say. You think he would say, okay, no Zeus, no Poseidon, no Apollo, no idols. Very good. Do you think that's what he would say? I think many people in our day believe that we, as a society, are not very religious anymore. We're past that point. We don't believe in God or we don't believe in deity. I think that's a lot of that's what a lot of people in our day think of. I heard someone once said, we are the first society in history that believes that we don't believe. I think that was Tim Keller who said that. See, everyone believes. Everyone, that's different from being religious, right? Everyone believes. And therefore, everyone worships. Whether you can see it or not, our lives are full of beliefs and faith, and thus full of worship. The only difference is what you believe and what you worship. I have shared this quote more than once, I think, before, but here we go again. American author, writer named David Foster Wallace said this, and Wallace is not a religious person at all. So he says, here's something else that's true. In the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there is actually no such thing as atheism. There is no such thing as not worshiping. Again, this guy is not religious at all. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. Look, the insidious thing about these forms of worship is not that they are evil or sinful. It is that they are unconscious. They are default settings of human nature. Interesting, right? And I think this is exactly what Paul is saying to the people of Athens in verse 22. If you look at verse 22, Paul says, people of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. You even have an altar to an unknown God. And that's our second point. What Paul saw was an altar to an unknown God, a worshiping temple dedicated to an unknown God. And with this point, we pay attention to the group of philosophers called Epicureans and Stoics. That's the two groups of philosophers that we read about in our passage. They were the people who listened to Paul, and they brought Paul to the Areopagus, the High Council. Of course, at the risk of over generalization, Let me give you a little bit of introduction about Epicureans and Stoics. Epicureans were people who believed that pleasure was the greatest good. What was important for them was life full of pleasures and life free from pain and suffering. So they were saying as much pleasure as possible. If you remember some of the depictions of Greeks and Romans, when we hear about people who were having a large feast banquet, they eat and eat and eat, and they vomit so that they can eat more. They drink and drink and drink, and they vomit to drink more. Those were the Epicureans. Again, overgeneralization, but as much pleasure as possible, no pain, no suffering. That was the Epicurean. On the other hand, Stoics were people who believed that the highest virtue for a human is to be able to endure pain and suffering. On the opposite side of Epicureans, they said it's a great virtue, the greatest good, if you can endure the pain and the suffering of life without displaying all your feelings and without complaints. Those were the Stoics. For them, good life is a life free from the desire of pleasure and free from the fear of pain. So they were, so to speak, moralists. And I think we still have Epicureans and Stoics, right? We don't call it that anymore. But in this large spectrum of life, we still have. And we often are Epicureans and Stoics. We all have our own ways of giving life a meaning, right? We all, just like Epicureans and Stoics, were trying to give meaning to their life, trying to answer the deep questions of life. We all have our own ways of answering big questions, whether they come from our culture, whether they come from our families, or from ourselves. Some find happiness and meaning in pleasure. Some find meaning and a meaning of life in strong ethics and controlled life. But Paul is saying, these are all too small. Right? They are all too limited. Whatever belief that you have, they are too small to have all of life and all of universe in them. You have, he's talking to the people of Athens, you have gods for all kinds of things, right? You have God, the God of the mountain, you have God of the water, God of the sea, you have God for wealth, you have God for health, you have God for family, you even have a God for love. But you still long for an unknown God. That's what Paul is saying. Here's another beautiful quote I have shared with you before, and that's this. This comes from a professor named Charles Sell from the Trinity Divinity School in Chicago. Listen carefully. If our greatest need had been information, God would have sent us an educator. If our greatest need had been technology, God would have sent us a scientist. If our greatest need had been money, God would have sent us an economist. If our greatest need had been pleasure, God would have sent us an entertainer. But our greatest need was forgiveness, so God sent us a savior. People of Athens, you have an educator God. You have a scientist God. You have a God of economy. You even have an entertaining God. But you still long for an unknown God. You unknowingly reverence, you unknowingly long for this unknown God, because you are never fulfilled. And this unknown God, I proclaim to you. That's what Paul says. So the third point that makes this passage still relevant to our day is what he said. And like I said, in this beautiful and powerful sermon that Paul preached to Areopagus Council, today we take the first two verses and think of this. So verses 24 and 25, it says, Paul begins to preach. Verse 24, "The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth. And he does not live in temples built by hands. He is not served by human hands as if he needed anything. But he himself gives all people life and breath and everything else." So Paul is not trying to prove that God exists. Rather, he is trying to show that you already know that God exists. You know he is there. You live as if he is there. And you know that the world doesn't make sense if God is not there. And this is what he means. See, anything that we create, anything that we come up with and trust and believe, and that's an idol by the definition of the Bible, with an idol, we end up finding ourselves working for the idol as if it needs our service. Let me say that again. Whenever we create and believe in something we made, that's an idol, we end up finding ourselves working for it, serving it as it needs our service. Be it money, recognition, fame, security and comfort, whatever. And Paul is saying, so we all unknowingly reverence and long for a God who does not need anything from us. We all unknowingly want a God who doesn't require our help. It's not a small God that needs our service, but God who created everything and God from whom all blessings flow. So Paul has a big problem with those who say, God needs our service. If you know, Paul hated Christianity, right? Before his conversion, he was killing Christians. As a Jew, as a Pharisee, he believed that if you want to become right with God, then you take the law of God, and with it, you show God that you are good enough. That was his understanding. If you want to be made right with God, you take the law of God, and with that you obey and follow, and you prove yourself that you are good enough. That was his identity, and that was his boast. Right? So when Jesus came and he said, you are made right with God without any of your work, without any of your merits, it was unacceptable to Paul. He was basically saying, how dare you say that we are made right with God without any of our services? I've lived for it. I've earned it. So I'm closer to God than any one of you. And Jesus was basically undermining, shattering his understanding of how we are made right with God. But now, here in Athens, Paul is saying, after encountering Jesus and the grace and saving work of Christ, he is saying something radically different. What does he say? He says, God is not served by human hands as if he needs anything from us. He only works this way. He himself gives to all people life and breath and everything else. And of course, that's exactly what Jesus said about himself. In Mark chapter 10, verse 45, this is what we read. The Son of Man, that's Jesus. Jesus came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus tells us why he came. So clear. There can be no mistake about this. Not to be served, but to serve. To give his life as a ransom for many, so that we may live an everlasting life. He did not come because he needed us. He came because we needed him. Friends, church, visitors, families, know this. We don't work for God. We don't impress him. We don't earn his grace. The incredibly good news is that our God is so great and so self-sufficient that we cannot even serve him as if he needs anything. And that his Son, Jesus Christ, is so great and his death is so sufficient that it forgives and saves us all. And all we can do, and all we can do is to receive that gift with believing in that. I close with one last quote from Reverend Charles Spurgeon. Let's pay our attention to what he has to say. My faith rests not in what I am, or what I shall be, or feel, or know, but in what Christ is, and what he has done, and in what he is doing for me. And all God's people said.